The city council will come to order and the clerk will call the roll. Here.
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 Mr. Corley, if you could lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance. I pledge allegiance to the flag
of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Oh, say can you see dawn's early light, what so proudly we hailed at the twilight's last gleaming, whose broad stripes and bright stars through the perilous fight. O'er the ramparts we watched were so gallantly streaming, and the rockets' red glare, the bombs bursting in air, gave proof through the that our flag was still there. Oh, say does that star-spangled banner yet wave o'er the
Thank you. We're going to move to executive communications, which there are none. General communications, I just wanted to thank St. Gregory Church for a wonderful parish festival they had this weekend. It was a three-day festival, and many people attended. I think it's probably going on 20 years now. Is there any other general communications? Councilman Howe.
Thank you, Mr. President, and I would also like to include Councilwoman Donna Travis and thank her and her ward for being hosts to the September 11th memorial, and if there's anything the Councilwoman would like to add, thank you.
Thank you.
Councilwoman Travis. It was a great event. It was a great event. It was well attended, and we're lucky to have everybody participate that day. We even went back at 7 o'clock to do the candles, so it was a good day. And the families really appreciate that. So thank you very much.
Councilman Sinapi.
Just want to remind people that the Pontiac Neighborhood Association is having a fall festival this month on the 28th.
Thank you. Any other comments? If not, next on the agenda is the presentation by the pension actuary and the OPEB actuary. My understanding is we're waiting on some handouts. In the meantime, we'll skip over to public comment. Rule 41, after general communications and prior to the consent calendar at each city council public hearing meeting, there shall be a 15-minute period during which citizens may comment about Walk City government issues subject to the following stipulations. The total period of time for public comment shall be 15 minutes. Comments need to be brief in order to allow as many citizens as possible to participate. The topics for comment shall be issues directly affecting city government. City council members will not respond to questions during the public comment period. The public comment session will terminate at the expiration of 15 minutes. Waiver of this provision requires unanimous consent. I understand from the clerk that no one had signed up for public comment. So we'll move on to appointments. Announcement of appointments, there are none. Appointments requiring confirmation, there are none. We'll move to the consent calendar, PCR 140-19, a resolution relative to bids. Committee report, finance.
Committee recommends favorable action.
For action, Councilman Lattiser.
Move favorable action on PCR 140-19.
Seconded by Councilman McAllister. Councilman Howe. Go ahead, Councilman Lattiser.
2019-233, State of Rhode Island tree trimming has become PCR 141-19. 2020-085, fertilizer and weed control has become PCR 142-19. 2020-102, municipal employees term life, favorable action. 2020-104, five-year consolidated plan, favorable action. 2020-112, structural firefighting helmets, becomes PCR 143-19. 2020-113, repair parts for snow plows, favorable action. 2020-114, police breast hat badges, insignias, etc., favorable action. 2020-124, Connecticut Village crosswalks, sidewalks, streetscapes, favorable action. 2019-072, service agreement for HVAC systems, favorable action. 2020-161, State of Rhode Island kitchen and appliance refrigeration maintenance, favorable action. 2020-162, State of Rhode Island maintenance and repair operations, favorable action. That completes the consent calendar.
Thank you. Is there any questions on the consent calendar that were not asked in the Finance Committee meeting? Any questions on the consent calendar that were not asked? If not, a yes is to approve the consent calendar, and the clerk will call the roll. Yes.
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 Councilman, we'll go to the items that were removed.
Mr. President, PCR 141-19.
The recommendation. What was the recommendation on that?
There was a recommendation of favorable action with an amendment.
Okay. If you could move it without the amendment, we'll get a second.
Move favorable action on PCR 141-19.
Seconded by Councilman McAllister. Councilman Howe. Go ahead, Councilman.
At the request of the department head, it was to amend the award to $12,000 from $7,000, of which $5,000 will be coming from item 63340, with an understanding that the expenditure for this fiscal year would be $2,330, and $7,000 would be coming from 63360. Those are the amendments.
So you're moving that as the amendment. Do I have a second on the amendment? Councilman McAllister, Councilman Howe. Any discussion on the amendment to increase the bid award to $12,000 with the line certain line items taking up the total cost of the $12,000? Any questions on the amendment? If not, the clerk will call the roll, and a yes is to approve. Yes.
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 Amendment stands passed. Councilman Lattiser, if you could move.
Move favorable action on PCR 141-19 as amended.
Seconded by Councilman Howe. Councilman McAllister. Any discussion on PCR 141-19 as amended? If not, the clerk will call the roll. Yes.
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 Yes. Yes.
Yes.
Yes.
PCR 141-19 stands passed as amended. Next item on the agenda is PCR 142-19, committee report, finance.
A committee recommended unfavorable action.
For action, Councilman Lattiser.
Unfavorable action on PCR 142-19.
Seconded by Councilman McAllister. Any
And Councilman Howe.
And Councilman Howe. Councilman McAllister did not second. Sorry. Okay. So any discussion on that?
Request was to go out for a rebid because of some inconsistencies in the initial bid. The department head also concurred with doing that.
Okay, any discussion on that? A yes bid is for unfavorable action on PCR 142-19. Any questions? If not, the clerk will call a roll, and a yes is to deny. Yes.
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 PCR 142-19 stands passed as unfavorable action. Next item on the agenda is PCR 143-19, committee report, finance.
Unfavorable action.
For action, Councilman Lattiser.
Committee recommends unfavorable action on PCR 143-19.
Second, Councilman McAllister, Councilman Howe. Any discussion?
Yes, Mr. President. After much discussion on the basic format of the bid, it was agreed between the committee and the department head to go back out for a rebid. They're also going to redo the specs to make it more compatible, we'll say, for item. So it was mutually agreed between the Finance Committee and the department.
Thank you. Any questions? If not, a yes is to deny the bid, and the clerk will call the roll. Yes.
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 PCR 143-19 stands past unfavorable action. Next item on the agenda is PCO 1815, Neighborhood Improvement Program, an ordinance that will make landlords responsible for the cost to pick up debris left on the street by tenants. This is first passage. It's not drafted. Committee report ordinance. Held till October 7th. Next item on the agenda is PCO 719, Pension Board. It's first passage. It's not drafted. Committee report, finance. Is that hold till October 7th?
Hold October 2nd. I'm sorry, 7th.
Hold till October 7th. And I believe on the first one it was hold till October 7th. I might have said this. Somebody said 7th, yes. Thank you. Next item on the agenda is PCO 1519, an ordinance in regards to health care. First passage, not drafted. Committee report, ordinance. Held till October 7th. Next item on the agenda is PCR 9417, bid number 2017-147, State of Rhode Island Telecommunication Services, installation and parts. Committee report, finance.
Hold till October 7th.
Held till October 7th. Next item on the agenda is PCR 14817, bid number 2018-143, installation of sprinklers at the Cooper Building Drill Hall. Committee report, finance.
Hold October 7th.
Held to October 7th. Next item on the agenda is PCR 9619, claim of Brandon Beauville. Committee report, public safety.
Committee recommends favorable action.
For action, Councilman Sinapi.
Committee recommends favorable action for the amount of $293.
I have a second. Councilman Howe. Any discussion on favorable action in the amount of $293? Okay. Any discussion on that? If not, the clerk will call a roll, and a yes is to approve. Yes.
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 PCR 9619, the claim of Brandon Beauville, stands passed. Next item on the agenda is PCR 12619, claim of Barbara Flagg. And that's committee report, public safety.
Committee recommends favorable action.
For action, Councilman Sinapi.
Committee recommends favorable action in the amount of $147.05.
Councilman Sinapi moves for favorable action, seconded by Councilman Lattice, Councilman Howe, Councilman Ricks. Any discussion on favorable action on the claim for $147.05? If not, a yes is to approve, and the clerk will call the roll. Yes.
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 PCR 12619, claim of Barbara Flagg, stands approved. Next item on the agenda is PCR 13019, resolution in regards to the 2020 council calendar. Committee report, intergovernmental. For action, Councilman Lattice.
I move favorable action on PCR 130-19.
Seconded by Councilman Howe. Any discussions? A yes is to approve, and the clerk will call the roll. Yes.
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 PCR 130-19 stands passed. Next item on the agenda is PCR 135-19. Now 2020-059, repair and rebuild hydraulic cylinders. Committee report, finance.
Committee recommends favorable action.
For action, Councilman Lattice.
Favorable action on PCR 135-19.
Seconded by Councilman McAllister, Councilman Howe. Any discussion on this that was not had in committee? A yes is to approve, and the clerk will call the roll. Yes.
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 PCR 135-19, now 2020-059, stands passed. I would suggest if somebody could make a motion for a five-minute recess while we get these materials handed to us, that'd be great. A motion for a five-minute
recess. Motion for a five-minute recess.
Second.
Seconded by Councilman McAllister. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? City Council stands in recess for 5 minutes. Thank you. We've been handed a few reports, and I think first on the agenda, we should probably do OPEB. Is the person from the actuary from OPEB present? Yes.
Good evening, Ryan. Mr. President, members of the council. Before you this evening is Mr. Edward Echeverria from the city's OPEB actuary, Danziger Markov.
Brian, before you leave the podium, I had two questions for you.
Sure.
I was handed two reports tonight on really the largest debt in the history of the city of Warwick, which is OPEB. One is dated February 11th, and it's sent to you. And the other one's dated of this year, and the other one's dated April 12th of this year. Mm-hmm. Why were these not given to the council when they came in?
I believe, I'd have to go back over this, but I believe these reports were provided and distributed at budget time, so I thought they were already provided.
These were given to us at budget time?
I believe so.
Under what?
Email. We don't have hard copy. It was via.
I just searched my email. I didn't see anything.
Okay.
And my email goes back years.
Okay.
Because I have a server at my office that saves every single email I get. Sir, if you could come to the podium.
Good evening.
Could introduce yourself for the record.
My name is Edward Echeverria, and I'm a senior actuary with Danziger and Markov from White Plains, New York.
If I could have the clerk swear you in, if you could swear in the witness.
I do.
Thank you.
I'm here to present the OPEB report for fiscal year end June 30, 2018. This report is the first report under the new GASB Statement 75.
Excuse me, sir. Did you just say June 30th?
Yes.
I have the last report I have is April 12th.
Okay. If you flip the it's for fiscal year ending June 30th, 2018.
Okay. This is the 2018
report. Okay. And the report's dated February 11th.
The report's dated February. Okay.
And we can flip ahead to the fourth page, which is the first page of numbers. Okay, and basically one element under GASB 75 that's new is the full net OPEB liability is now to be displayed and included on the face of the financial statements.
Could you explain that? The full compared to what was going on in the past?
Yes. In the prior year and under GASB 45, there was an item called the OPEB obligation, and that was the item that was posted as the liability under the plan. On this page, the third line from the bottom, that value as of June 30, 2017, was $141 million.
And when was that as of?
June 30, 2017. So now under June, for fiscal June 30, 2018, the full liability called the net OPEB liability up near the top will be presented on the financial statements as the liability. As of July 1, 17, the amount was about $356 million. As of June 30, 18, $352 million.
So you said, is that 306? I think you said 356.
356.
I don't see 356.
Right. Well, what's happened is we've gone from the old statement 45, and the what was booked in on the financials is $141 million. Then starting with fiscal 18, basically an additional $215 million needed to be recorded as a prior period adjustment for financial statement purposes.
So why did they go to a GATSB 75 statement? Is it more accurate?
I'm sorry, could you repeat the
question? Sure. Why did the federal government require us to go to a GATSB 75 disclosure?
It's not a federal government issue. It's much
government
as
accounting office.
Right, yeah.
Okay. That's part of the federal government last time I checked.
Sure.
Okay.
Well, just to give a little bit of background, going back about 12 years, what was recorded simply was a pay-as-you-go expense every year, nothing more, and no liability shown on the balance sheet at all. Then in 2007, 2008, depending on your fiscal year end, it was just GASB 45 was issued, and under that approach, what was booked as an expense was not the full liability, but what was booked was basically a unit cost plus an amortization of the liability reduced by whatever contributions or benefit payments were made for the year. Okay, so that was the idea. And my own opinion is that was a good interim step going from zero to something. And under that approach, what took place is over the 9-10 years, an obligation of $141 million built up on the city's balance sheet. Okay. Now, in a footnote, the larger liability did exist, but for purposes of the face of the financial statement, the $141 million was the recorded amount.
In other words, cities and towns weren't required to show the full. So they didn't.
Yeah, I think it just, yeah, they weren't, and it typically was not, it wouldn't have taken place. The what was defined as the liability, the obligation, was the $141 million number on the face of the financials.
And as you said, it was a good start.
Yes, yes. So. But
I just try to get everybody up to speed as to how all of a sudden we got here.
Right.
Because there's a lot of people that joined as employees of the city that never heard of this. Now they're reaching retirement. They're like, who do we believe? Is this true? Where did this come from? How did these numbers magically appear? And when you state what the numbers are, I don't think people believe you. You know, and I'm not talking about you. I think they're talking about all officials just because they don't understand how this could rapidly appear when it was really there all the time, but it wasn't required to be shown in the format that we're showing it today.
Right. So the truth is the larger number of which, granted, it wasn't 352 million at this point. It was maybe 200 and something. But that would have been in the financial statement in a footnote. It was there, but that just as a footnote only. So now we're dealing with that type of number now being put on the face of the financials as the true liability. Now, we have that liability here, so what's deemed to be expense for the year consists of basically three items summed in this case. Number one is the line called service cost, and that basically takes into account basically the current year, 1 year's worth of cost. The net OPEB liability takes into account for retireds, it's their full full liability of expected benefit payments going forward. Their career is ended, so they're 100% in. However, now active employees are also included as far as what employees that we would expect to become eligible for OPEB benefits at retirement.
Now, before they were not?
They have been all the way through up to now. But I'm just trying to frame out what the liability is and then comparing it to this unit, this 1 year cost. So, but just to give a rough example, let's say that the active employees would have a 20-year career, and let's say that they had, all of them had 10 years worth of into their career. What I'm saying is that the service cost number, that would be like the 11th year for them. Okay, so the obligation, the net OPEB liability in this case would include 10 years worth for the actives, everything for the retirees. And then now we work our way down to the service cost, and that would be the 11th year. Again, those year measurements are not precise, but it gives you an idea of what we're talking about. So we have that service cost, the 11th year. Then we have an interest cost, which is the interest on the obligation, the liability. And we're using a discount rate of 2.98%. Now, that is quite a low interest rate. What it is, though, for plans that do not pre-fund their obligation, and quite frankly, unless you've built up a lot of assets, if you even were pre-funding, you're required to use an index specified by the Government Accounting Standards Board.
So you're assuming, is that a rate of return?
It's deemed the rate of return.
Right.
So for present
you're assuming
value,
that in your calculations, and not to jump ahead, but on the next page, our debt went up to $406 million. Net OPEB liability, 6/30/2018. And that was last year, I get it. But you're assuming that we have a rate of return of 3% on our investments, and we'll get to the pension actuary in a minute, when in fact we have no investments.
Correct, yes. For plans that don't have any assets, the computation is required to be based on that low index, of which it changes from year to year.
So could I ask you, if you didn't assume that we were going to make 3% on, I don't know what you're assuming that we have in the bank because we have nothing for OPEB, how that would change these numbers?
Because,
I mean, what the heck? We want an accurate picture,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
I mean, we don't want to assume a 3% rate of return on zero is zero.
Right. No, but the idea, well, the way the liabilities are determined is by taking every future benefit payment that's going to go to a person, and we discount them back to today. And if a plan was funded and was earning X percent, and you had enough assets built up, then you could use X percent as your rate of return. Since there are no assets, we are required to discount back those future benefits at this index. Okay, that's just specified in the GASB statement is how you do it.
This is what you have to use.
Yes, that's
okay.
Right.
Suppose you didn't have to use it, what would happen to the $406 million? I would assume it would go up.
If you didn't have to.
Well, in other words, you know, you're talking, correct me if I'm wrong, but you're talking about a rate of return on investments that don't exist. So I would assume that has a positive effect on how much money you have if you're assuming that you're going to get 3% on something. I don't know how you're applying it. Correct?
Because you have no assets, you're saying you have no interest that's going toward it.
Right.
So
I would assume the amount would go up.
The amounts, if you use zero,
yeah,
the amount would go up. That's correct.
How significantly would it go up? Because that's what we're using, zero.
Well, I'll tell you what we have here on the second page. We have 2.98%,
yeah,
at the top that shows the $352 million. Now, what we're required to do is show a 1% sensitivity on each side. So our next step to try to answer your question is we look to the left and we see 1.98%, okay? And we see the liability would go from 352 to 382, okay? So
1% is $30 million?
Yeah, it would impact it by 30.
So, yeah. So 3% would be 90?
Yes, that's as good a guess as any. That's
$90 million more.
Yes. So,
okay.
So now the idea is these monies for future benefits, they're not, yeah, if you could put it in a trust now, yeah, right, it would grow at whatever interest rate. Instead, those monies are going to come from somewhere else in the future, tax revenue or whatever the case may be to fund that. So, but anyway, that's, I think we got your question answered.
I did. I noticed Councilman Lattice had a question.
Yes.
Yes. Thank you, Mr. President. So the question is, how can one put out a financial projection of where one stands financially with an assumed income that isn't occurring? That to me would translate into my making financial obligations on a personal note, assuming that I have a trust fund income of X dollars and cents that's going to come in every year. So I establish a certain amount of debt that I'm saying I'm going to be able to afford to pay back because I'm assuming a 3% return on my investments. when that 3% return doesn't occur because I have no investments, what happens to my financial picture? I've established a level of debt, assuming that I'm going to have a certain rate of return on investments to be able to pay for this debt that doesn't exist because I don't have any investments. I don't understand how that translates into a accurate financial picture.
Okay. Well, whether it be whether you have assets or not, there's a quantification being done of the present value of these benefit payments that are being made. And that would be in a pension plan, it would be in a OPEB plan, it could be in anything. And in a pension plan, that's historically funded along the way to a degree, okay? So whether it's funded in total or not, in most cases, it's not funded in total. So that said, the liability gets computed and discounted in some manner. If the pension plan wasn't fully funded, then you'd say, okay, well, how do you quantify the liability of the unfunded piece? The bottom line is a discount rate is determined. And in this particular case, since there are no assets, in which many OPEB plans do not have assets, the idea is to quantify some sort of liability. And part of the reason for GASB 75 is to be able to compare municipalities and to for purposes of bond ratings and things like that. And that being the case, the idea is to come up with something that's uniform enough to be able to do this comparison. So if we're using part under that premise, we're talking about comparing City of Warwick to City of whoever as an example. And in both cases, these 2.98% would be used, and you'd determine which group had more of an issue than others, you know, than the other, okay? So part of it is about some uniformity to be able to compare obligations of different municipalities, school districts, and whoever, okay? So I understand your statement about no assets, so how can you have this measure? But the idea is GASB 75 has stated how to quantify the stuff. They've stated this is the method to do it, and this is the discount rate to use, and they give us a method to use to help have a comparability among municipalities.
So it's a concept. It's kind of like scaling the grades, because you stated that, you know, this is going to compare Warwick to other communities, et cetera. So again, I'm looking at basing a financial picture or a financial projection on a calculated amount of return on something that doesn't exist. That would be like me going to the bank and asking the bank for a line of credit of $500,000 based upon profits and expected returns on investments that don't exist. The bank's not going to entertain that, right? I think isn't that a formula for a significant failure?
Yeah, I mean, again, OPEB plans have not been pre-funded in many instances, but OPEB plans have existed for many, many years, particularly in the public sector.
I understand that.
So funded or not, they've existed, and that concern about the analyzing the financial picture and everything, it's really always technically existed. It just hasn't been required to be computed. So going back 11 years again, before even the GASB 45, there were OPEB plans. They ran similarly to how they run now, but all that was done on a financial statement was to show, you paid $11 million in premium payments for the year and contributed $11 million and paid them out, and that's all that existed for purposes of any financial reporting. But nevertheless, there was still a liability. Okay, it just wasn't computed. What GASB 45 insisted on was quantifying the liability. And to let you know, in most meetings that I've participated in and presented at over the last 10 years, in spite of the fact that the way the liability, quote unquote, was presented and computed for GASB purposes, which ultimately accumulated up to the $141 million I had said earlier, I would always point to the bigger number and say this number is the number really to look at, because that takes into account all the present values of those expenses. So the GASB 45 expense approach I found rather arbitrary. The truth of the matter is, if GASB 45 had started 5 years later, your $141 million number might only be $80 million because you weren't in the game that long. If GASB 45 had started 5 years earlier, your $140 might be $200 million. But I've always tried to point to that larger number just to say, listen, this does exist. It's a real thing. So, and now GASB 75 is saying, yes, it's a real thing, and we want you to put it on the face of the financials now.
I'm not going to continue to belabor this issue, but I have two follow-up questions. One is, what you are reporting to us is that we're basing a financial picture on a 3% return on investments that does not exist. That's correct.
Yeah, there's no assets, so there's no return, right?
Okay. And I'll hold up on the second one. So I just wanted to make sure that I'm clear on that this financial projection that we're talking about today is based upon, so that 3%, what did you say that number was? The number 3% return on investments, is that the 10 million change number?
Yeah, the 2.98% is the index that's required to be used. We're using an index under Standard & Poor's for municipal high-grade bonds. Okay, so that's the rate as of the end of fiscal 18, and so that's what we're disclosing normally. Okay. Based on.
I'm asking to get the number. What is the dollar amount of the projected 3% return on investments that you're using? What's the dollar amount?
He said, Councilman, $90 million. If you didn't include the 3%, that's how much the overall unfunded liability would go up.
So it's $90 million of anticipated returns on investments that don't exist.
It'd be closer to $500 million.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Okay. That's, so I when just you were saying 3%, you were saying the difference between 0% and 3%. I'm sorry. Okay.
And not to overstate the obvious, but that 3% is compounded, because you're assuming a rate of return every year. So you're gonna get interest on the interest that you never get. Mm-hmm. That's why you're up to 90. Sorry to interrupt you.
No, not at all.
It's important for everybody to understand that, and we understand that your charge was to follow GATSB 75 standards. That's what your charge was. Mm-hmm. What we're just trying to point out to everybody and everybody in the city too, is that if you were to have a charge that didn't require you to assume a 3% rate of return, your numbers would be different, which you acknowledged. Thank you.
Council President?
Okay.
May I ask a question? Just for clarification purposes.
Sorry, Councilman.
So, the Council President just mentioned that it was your charge. So, for the general accounting principles and for the purpose of this and other municipalities, is everyone doing 2.98 as the rate of calculation?
For groups that are not pre-funding their obligation at all, or have started pre-funding but have a very, don't have a large amount versus their liabilities, they're required to use the index. That's correct.
And when you say index, you mean the 2.98?
Yeah. There's a couple different rates that could be applied, but it's based on one of these indexes, and 2.98% is that. So yeah. So you're talking about a consistency for most, unless you've got a group that's got a significant amount of OPEB trust assets already built up. They're going to have to use the index.
All right. Thank you.
Okay, so just to finish up, going back to the first page of numbers again, just to finish up on what we call the expense. Basically, the expense consists of that, what I'll call the 11th year again, so it's $10.6 million, the service cost. The interest cost is basically the interest on the OPEB liability. And then from there, in addition, there is an amortization, and we deem there to be a bit of a gain, actually, for fiscal 18. And what happens is that gain is allowed to be amortized over a period of years, really required to be recognized over a period of years. So in this particular case, it's a credit of $1.7 million. So for purposes of a typical, what I'll call the regular expense, which will be the expense going forward, we have a $19 million expense that will apply to OPEB for fiscal 18. Now, however, we have, because this is the first year, and we're...
Just so we can understand that. So you're saying that our obligation in fiscal year 19 is to pay $19 million for retiree health care?
No, it's not quite that way. Just for purposes, for accounting purposes, what would count as the expense is $19 million.
Okay.
For purposes of, I have a number a few pages ahead that has a development of what it would take, say, to pay the thing off in 20 years. And we'll come up to that shortly.
Okay.
But that's a number that's higher than the 19. But this is an accounting number.
Thank you.
Okay. Anyway, because we've now gone from GASB 45 to 75, there's an adjustment now, because we have to get up to the $350 million and have that fully on the balance sheet. We're at 141 under GASB 45. So there's a one-time prior period adjustment of $215 million, okay, of which there was something conceptually comparable under pension years ago, when pension plans had to recognize, get the full liability showing on the financials also. But so it's a similar concept that the accountants and such understand. But anyway, there's a one-time extra expense here to get up to the full liability. So, but going forward, you'd consider the expense to be, something that looks like and smells like the $19 million, okay, rather than $100 million or $1 million. Okay, to flip to the next page, this is disclosure information that I think we can all understand could be deemed useful, because we're saying, okay, well, suppose the discount rate was 1% lower, or 1% higher, or in our case, we extrapolated to 3% lower. And so to be able to, we've been asked to produce these numbers so that people could determine, all of a sudden you look 6 months out and say, gee, what are interest rates looking like? And you might have a handle on how the liability might be impacted. So that's what we have on the under the discount rate. We had to do such a thing. And then also, we did a similar, we were required to do a similar thing for healthcare inflation. So, you know, just looking, again, our net OPEB liability number in the middle, $352 million. If the inflation was 1% less, we're saying $306 million. If it's 1% more, we're saying $406 million. So, again, giving a framework for people to pick up a financial statement and do, you know, not have to really guess, but have an idea what a 1% change would be. Okay, so and that's an expansion on what 45 required.
So that you say 1% change, that's in the discount rate.
Well, this thing I'm talking about, the healthcare inflation rate.
Inflation rate. Right. So you're assuming what inflationary rate for healthcare?
We are, our healthcare inflation assumption, it's actually a descending one, and I'll explain why in a minute. But basically, the first year starts at 8%, and then we scale it down by a half a point. And then after 7 years, and 7 years, and years thereafter, we're using 5.
But okay. That hasn't, I mean, we haven't seen those type of numbers as far as how the percentage. We had our healthcare consultant in not too long ago, and we were looking at double-digit increases for healthcare on, you know, so I don't know, you know, how are you assuming that healthcare costs are going to go down?
Okay, I'll explain.
Or is that. That is that an assumed standard that the federal government told you
it
to
is,
use?
It is an accepted practice in the industry, because the idea is, for example, if we're going to have double digit increases in healthcare inflation, it wouldn't be very long before that would totally consume our entire economy. So I guess on faith, the idea is that, listen, it just can't stay up that, you know, and we don't see 11% per year typically either. But that being the case.
What was the increase last year and the year before in healthcare?
Yeah, offhand, it would depend on the particular plan, but.
Do you know what our plan is?
Pardon?
Do you know what our plan went up?
I don't.
When you come up with these estimates, you're not, this isn't specific to us. There's standards that are used across the industry that you plop into to the formula to get numbers.
Yes, that's true.
Councilman Corley.
When you separate out the health care and have this sensitivity to health care trend rates, isn't that about where what the OPEB is entirely designed to do, to tell us what our other pension employee benefits, that is healthcare. What else is there?
I'm sorry, could you just run that by me again? You mentioned the word pension in the middle of that. I'm sorry, it threw me off.
You're talking to us about OPEB liability, right? And that would, OPEB, stand for other pension employment benefits, right?
Yeah, benefits other than pensions, that's correct.
Right, other than pension. And other than health care, what else are we talking about?
If a plan has provided life insurance post-retirement, for example, for their retirees, dental benefits, things of those vision benefits that I just mentioned.
No, I understand that. I think that this whole discussion is about health care costs. So that's why I don't understand why you created a separate thing to talk about health care trend rates, because those are really OPEB trend rates.
Right. These items are, again, required by the statement to be presented. To give
required by what state?
GASB 75.
That is not a state. Rhode Island's a state.
State
GASB is not a government. You chose to use that in the title, the Government Accounting
Standards Board.
Right.
Yes.
But it is not the United States government. It's not the World Bank. It's just, there's no government involved in this. This is an accounting exercise, isn't it?
Yes, that's correct.
And it's an accounting exercise used by the bond market to set what the interest rates will be for the people that are seeking bonds and for the people that are investing in bonds.
Yes, that is one purpose of it, absolutely.
Okay. That's my point for now. Thanks.
All right. So. The next page is just simply an element that displays any gains or losses. Oh, yes.
To the next page. On the bottom of the page we're on now, which is the healthcare page, you have a note at the bottom that our active employees are 711 and our retired employees are 938.
Yes.
Which everyone in this council is aware of the fact that in June 2018 we crossed that slippery slope of more retirees than active employees. So is there any type of calculation figured into the required amounts of money needed to fund our essentially unfunded healthcare budget now that we have some 220 more retirees than active employees? And that's something that I would say is fair to speculate is going to continue to grow. So is there a formula or a process or a number that you're using to determine how much additional monies are required either from the taxpayers or from the working employees to pay for those healthcare benefits where there is no contribution?
Okay. What I'd like to do, I want to point to a number, and if we can turn ahead a couple more pages. I just had the page that I was starting to talk about, which was the third one. So let's flip ahead past that and past one more, and now we have another one that's a landscape.
Can you show it over here, please?
It's just a landscape page. So, this is called Schedule of Contributions and Assumptions. Okay, so if we're on the same page. The first line, there's an item called Actuarial Determined Contribution. Does everybody see that, have that? Okay, so you want to flip ahead to, all right, there's two landscape pages after that last portrait one.
Does that have a title on the top of the page?
Yes. And
I was asking for the title.
It says City of Warwick Required Supplemental Information, Schedule of Contributions and Assumptions. Okay. Now at the top, the first line, we have something that we put in.
Excuse me, I'm going to interrupt one more time. So the following page would be City of Warwick's Requirement Supplementing. So it would just be like a sentence on the top. This is the page you're speaking of? Or am I still in? I've been writing. It's so much easier.
Well, I'll tell you, the first number on this page is 34 million.
We have it. At the very top, it says 2018, right above the 34 million. All right, this one. In the city, which is the one I was on.
Sorry, yours were changed to portrait when they were printed. Okay. Mine is still landscape, right, which good. Didn't help anyone.
All right. That one right there. That's it.
Nope. Oh, wait.
That's not it. Turn the page one more time. Yeah, it says 34 million. There you go, right there. That's the thing. There were two. One's 10 million, one's 34. So all
yes, right. 34.
Thank you.
Sure.
So you were referring to us to the actual actuarial determined contribution,
yes. Okay.
Which you said was $34 million.
Right. So, and that consists of the unit cost, the 11th year, again, that I was describing earlier, plus a 20-year amortization of the full unfunded $350 million number. Okay, so.
So
if you were going to pay this off in 20 years, that would be how much would have to be contributed in total, and then counting the benefit payments to retirees. The benefit payments to retirees, also these contributions, $11.4 million. So there's a deficiency there of $23 million. Okay, but to answer the question, if you're looking for a number to try to get this thing that you were going to try to get it funded at, over a period of time, we presented one at $34 million.